You are tuned in to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Greetings, everyone, and welcome to a Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. I'm your host, Lance White. Today, I'm thrilled to welcome Alexander Putney to the show. Alex is the creator of the Human Resonance Organization, which can be found at www.humanresonance.org. Alex is an artist, author, visionary, and awakened conscious being. He is expanding upon the suppressed work of Nikola Tesla and the standing waveforms which resonate using three frequencies in the Fibonacci ratio of 6.81. His groundbreaking research demonstrates that the pyramids, crop circles, and sacred geometric formations fall into standing waveforms which contain the resonance necessary for shifting into higher frequencies. So let's find out more now by welcoming Alex to the show. Hi, Alex. How are you?
I'm doing great, Lance. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I'm very thrilled to have you on the show. When I heard your interviews and began delving into your website, I was absolutely, my mind was blown to find such a vast repository of high-frequency information. When did you start discovering some of this stuff, and what would you like to share as we open this show right now?
Well, I guess the opening for me, which may also be a way other people can get involved themselves, was when I was in South America discovering the psychoacoustic whistles of the ancient cultures of the Andes. And so there are instruments out there that modern vessel makers are producing to reproduce these sounds. And I'm going to hopefully be one of those to be able to sell instruments on the market through my website. And I'm working towards that soon. And so that was an experience for me that began in Arica, Chile, studying the Chinchorro culture during a traveling fellowship from Brandeis University in 2001-2002. And it's been explosive since then, the information flowing in through the use of that psychoacoustic technology, as well as through the process of drinking sacred waters.
Wow. Well, I'll be first on the list to be getting some of those instruments. You can trust that. And I'm doing a lot of research on my own with the power of water, and I found that your work involves the crosses over, as everything does, because everything is interconnected. It crosses over into research on colloidal silver and gold, the particle size of silver as an antiviral, the work of Matsuro Emoto, and my own recent research with the work of Andrew Norton Weber on distilled water and liquid therapies. So water is an important aspect of the higher frequencies and the crystalline technologies that we're moving into right now, would you say?
I think definitely it's the crux of the issue when people look at their own health and moving not only to a state of natural health, but further than that, augmenting your own consciousness and augmenting your bioenergetic levels to basically, to use a metaphor for water, to have the cup overflow, to have so much energy that you can actually start to become a healer and work on others. So I think, part of the ancient knowledge that's passed on in the Vedas is really relevant here. And I would just quote a few things that the ancients had to say for us that come down through so many oral traditions and are in this form now for us. And I'll quote from the Chandogya Upanishad, which tells us, "Soma is food for the gods." From the Rig Veda, we hear, "We have drunk the soma and become immortal. We have attained the light the gods discovered. One thinks to have drunk soma. Of him, no one ever tastes." So these are pretty enigmatic statements. And if you don't know what soma is, you may not be able to make sense of it. And it's only been recently that these ancient wisdom traditions have been understood in the scientific context, and we've been able to study colloids and understand that all of the different effects that we see from gold and silver colloid use today are, you know, associated in ancient times with this word soma, and that in fact electrum, gold and silver, a mix of gold and silver nanoparticles in colloidal waters, are the technique used in ancient times and the one we're using today.
Wow. Well, that certainly ties quite a few things together. And one thing that I'm becoming aware of is the necessity to keep things simple and to discover things that empower us, that our consciousness and the frequency raising that we are doing and in, through techniques and substances that are readily available or that we can replicate ourselves. And you just mentioned the soma, and that reminds me of the alchemical research that many are doing right now on trying to find the elixir of life, the elixir of light, which is referred to as mana often, and the work of the quantum physicist Nassim Haramein also is delving into in terms of this substance which many speak of, and I'm guessing or I'm actually surmising that this substance may be the same substance or a similar frequency that is being used for soma and alchemical substances and so on. Do you have any thoughts on that one?
I do. I think that there is an ancient technology that the Atlanteans were using, and I think my books very clearly connect that technology with the artifacts here in La Mana, Ecuador, where the waters flow from the sacred mountain, where I've been able to find land for purchase, and I'm working out that process now to be able to start a healing center with this water. Mm-hmm. So these artifacts really, for me, were the linchpin that held together the concepts that I was reading about through the Vedas to artifacts on the ground that I could study that had sacred waters associated with them. And it's been an amazing journey to arrive, you know, years later. I first came here in 2004 through the invitation of Klaus Dohna and his work with the Unsolved Mysteries exhibition.
Wow.
And at this point, we've come a long way to on separate paths, I have to say, because Klaus's work has really been to show the pieces, and my research has not fallen into the category of being useful to him in that regard,
right,
which is unfortunate. But at this point, I feel so happy to be here to share the water with people locally, because we're not bottling and shipping it and concerning ourselves with that, because the shipping industry itself is not something that's compatible with, you know, the Vedic tradition.
Exactly.
And people, you know, people out there who want to experience the water need to understand the idea of pilgrimage, and as it goes so far back to the same ancient tradition, and the fact of going and being in the place and you know, feeling the energy is really a big thing that we want to offer here now with the opportunity we have to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an amazing thing that I want to quote right from the Atharva Veda, because we're experiencing what these enigmatic texts tell us about these colloids, these electrum colloids. So, you know, they write, "The man who supplies food hath always soma pressing stones adjusted, a wet soma filter. He who hath this knowledge wins the luminous spheres." Now, what are they speaking about, first of all, with soma? Well, we've identified that. Well, what are these luminous spheres? Well, I have photographs now on my site, which I just posted a couple weeks ago, from the experiences that we are having with the luminous spheres here in La Mana. And these are photos that, you know, many people have seen, orb pictures. These are fairly unique in a few ways. And they're not unique. Let's say that. Certainly many people experience these things.
Yeah.
But the consciousness of the interactions that I'm having with them, mm-hmm. and the intention behind their appearance and the message they convey through their structure and the mathematics that I'm transducing and bringing into this plane from that higher level that they, I believe, represent,
mm-hmm.
those things are unique. And I believe in the photo, you feel that energy. So I encourage everyone to check them out.
Absolutely. No question about it. I mean, you know, you can read PDF files till the cows come home, and I haven't delved into yours yet, but I'm going to read everything that you have posted, because I know that it has great value. But one picture, and I saw that picture with you with the orb, and it just conveyed just immense amount of energy. So yes, it is worth 1,000 words. I'm kind of stumbling over my own words today because I'm in a slightly altered state, and I don't know if it's the solar flares or just the cleansing that I'm doing with the distilled water, a variety of substances, or something else, and that's okay, because we just have to, deal with it, because we're on the show live right now. So, and that's fun. I love that because, you know, anything can happen. Anything could come out of my mouth, and anything could come out of yours. I'm particularly interested. I mean, there's so much. I wish I could talk to you for about 10 hours and just tap into the resources that are you. But we're going to have to, I'm going to have to focus. And one of the things that you talk about also is relates to the Russians and the Anastasia books and the power that DNA has to alter via consciousness through saliva, bodily fluids, and to unravel the DNA from a spiral which is tight and fearful to one that is like a ladder, that is more like a ladder to the higher frequencies or to the stars within, the star within mm-hmm. that we are. Can you, would you like to share about any of that stuff?
Sure. it's really the crux of the material that I present, which I found no parallel anywhere in literature in modern times of anything that was really synthesizing the material that the pyramids present to us in their geometry and their structure that's here today. So when I came across the Siberian material and the tradition from the Vedrus culture that's shining through so clearly through the work of Vladimir McRae, I was really so happy to see corroboration from my findings from the source, from the horse's mouth. These are the ancient culture alive today and giving us something completely different than I was receiving through the pyramid technologies as I was understanding them globally. And here she pops up and presents these ideas for simply creating a heartbeat resonance in your environment by the planting technique, by your saliva, and by going barefoot. And the combination of the different details that she provides really makes somewhat sense to what I've discovered through the Vedic technology instilled in the pyramids, that it was one of the most powerful experiences, along with this experience with the higher dimensional orbs, that just keeps reinforcing for me what, you know, the fearlessness that you have to have when you present this kind of material to the world. And, you know, the negative energy that I do perceive in the world really shies away from the light where I'm shining it. And I'm so glad to be in a position to have enough knowledge where I know how to use it properly and how to convey the information in a way that helps people instead of, you know, finding frustration through, you know, where I was, you know, 8 years ago, for example, where I had a major cognitive dissonance experience that, you know, led to this, you know, this breakthrough. So it's been amazing.
Is cognitive dissonance another way of saying a major awakening?
Also an isolation from a certain way of being, thinking, and perceiving the world. You know, in a way like you would think Carlos Castaneda experienced with Don Juan, you know, in a way of just, and not, you know, substance-based as his experience was, but simply in the state of, like, really realizing that, like, for example, in Chile, I was in the desert, and I was collecting acoustic whistles from this ancient Chinchorro culture, and I would take them to the museum where I was studying the bodies of this culture, and all of the physical anthropologists there were so interested in the physical bodies that they were like, oh, nice whistle. Yeah, you should do a recording. Cool. And okay, we got a lot of work to do. We don't really have any funding, so ciao. And it was really sad to see, you know, they were working on such bare minimums, you know, their resources, that they couldn't dedicate, you know, not even a conversation about these things or a second look. So when I realized that that was my job, it was a kind of, you know, the experience most people have when, I guess, if you're raised with, you know, the Catholic Church and you rebel from them, and at some point you come to, you know, a realization that, you know, someone is not going to tell you how to communicate with the Creator, because you're you and the creation's creation, and you're going to communicate, and you already have that communication going on, and it doesn't need to manifest itself in a religious way. And that was the same realization I had in the desert there in Chile, which was anthropology, you know, none of these fields, science itself was not going to give me a degree for this work, was not going to respect it, and it didn't have anything to do with that, and it was up to me to find the validity of it and the use of it. And that's what led to my self-reliance on so many other things, not taking someone's word for it that sacred geometry means this for that, or, you know, how to apply these things, but to look at how the ancients applied them and speak about that directly, and not have any middleman telling me, you know, on some radio show what I should think or buy into, but like looking for people like Carl Munk, who I can test what he says. You know, that guy will never tell me something that's fishy or wishy-washy, because it's all in numbers. You know, is he pulling my leg here, or is this for real?
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more on all of that. And this is a time when we're uniquely positioned, from having incarnated here, to tap in directly to the source, or, you know, source, which is us, which is all that is. And that is where the information comes from. And we are so brainwashed and controlled by going into other sources that have set themselves up as the intermediaries, that it's time for all of those old paradigms to unravel and break down, so that we can be the sovereign beings that we are. Now, you mentioned the pyramids, and I'm really interested in that, because you said something that I have never, ever, ever heard anyone else say, and it's mind-blowing information, that the pyramids are made out of synthetic material. I have never heard anybody say that before, and I have a friend and guest that's an Egyptologist, Dr. Carmen Bolter, and she's going to be in the Great Pyramid on 11-11-11, so it'll be interesting to see what happens as a result of that trip, as are many people doing celebrations and awakenings on that date. What can you tell us about the pyramids, their age, what they're for, and so on?
Well, in my book, Lightwater, I lay out as much of the information that I believe is relevant to knowing the deeper history of the pyramids, because certainly attributing them to Egyptian civilization as we know it, or as it's told to us by the Egyptologists, is not an adequate frame of reference to look at such ancient structures. And I believe that the pyramids have such a long history that they were refaceted probably several times, that we have information available to us that comes from very unusual sources that corroborates what the Mayan elders and the Mayan calendar speak of when they give us an astronomical galactic view from their cosmovision. So when I encountered information, for example, presented by Billy Meyer and the Pleiaran extraterrestrials who visit him and provide photograph opportunities for him and, you know, take him on all kinds of trips, you know, I read about what he's talking about. It just blew my mind. And I realized that information being given by Semyase, say, one of his contacts, was corroborating what the Mayans were speaking of, and speaking about a cycle of catastrophe that, when I read other information, for example, channeled material about a photon belt, and then some more channeled material about galactic cycling waves from the Cassiopeian material, all this information just seemed to ring with the same tone, the same resonance that, you know, our system has a binary clock. And as I looked further into that, I found that the ancient yuga cycles were well known, and that this was something well understood in ancient times, and that the extraterrestrial information today needs to be understood within that context, and to I think, is provided by them to bridge that gap back to the ancient times, and to provide that ancient astronomy, which has always been known on certain levels of Earth's population. You know, I think that there are gurus and adepts everywhere who do maintain these things, although they don't go by that name. We call them that from the outside, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, to get to the point about the pyramids, I believe information given by Bill Meyer is accurate, and it's echoed by other teachers who suggest that this cycle, this cosmic cycle of 36,650 years, or somewhere thereabouts, evolves
to start. Okay. We're having just a little bit of difficulty with the connection, so I think that Don is going to do something from his side to see if he can't get that to work a little better.
BBS Radio.com.
All right.
Yes. Okay, it is better when we can hear each other. So now, do you feel that the sacred sites, because you have connected the ley lines or the invisible lines that connect all of these sites together on the planet, is this some kind of activation for the planet? And, of course, the solar system is all being raised in frequency as well, according to many sources. And there is some kind of lifting or ascension or a higher frequency incoming and outgoing process going on in alignment with the various centers, the solar centers, the cosmic center, and so on. Do you think that the sacred sites are designed to be activated about this time going on into 2012?
Definitely I do, and I think it's an ongoing process that is mirrored throughout the whole solar system, and that's the beauty of what this, you know, what astronomy is for us. It's a mirror on our planet. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, the Mayan culture specifically called Jupiter the smoking mirror in which man does not see himself clearly, because it's referring to the fact that the vortices, the vertical points on Jupiter as a mathematical structure that is also present in the sacred sites on Earth, and yet the masses of humanity look at Jupiter and do not recognize that fact. And so they're literally telling us in such ancient enigmatic words, phrases that make no sense until you make that connection with modern astronomy to understand that those vortices and, for example, the new vertical points that are showing up on Uranus, you know, those are in the news recently. And, of course, the other gas planets as well are all showing not only more energy, the plasmas or gases in the planets are more luminous. And, of course, when they call them gas planets, they should be called plasma planets. And, of course, you know, throughout astronomy, things that are plasmas emitting light are called gases and thought to be reflecting light, which is completely ridiculous. And this is, you know, bias of astronomy. But, you know, the application of plasma physics to astronomy reveals that everything the Mayans were talking about is a reality and that we are literally...
Alex? We're going to have to take the show off the air because you're breaking up on the Skype.